Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is Plush Care. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Jones! Bowden!
He's got it! England have won the World Cup by the barest of margins!
Stokes flashes it away through the covers for four, and England have won the match!
Hello, and welcome to the Analysts Inside Cricket with me, Simon Hughes, Simon Mann, having a little holiday. But no shortage of guests on this show, and we have a very special guest today. We're in the throes, of course, of the South African tour of England with T20s and ODIs underway and, of course, the Test series to follow. And my guest today is a very, very great cricketer from South Africa. And I know he'll blush when I say this, but arguably he is one of the greatest cricketers who never played Test cricket, certainly in the modern era. It is, of course, Vincent van der Bijl, who was a very, very fantastic bowler in the 1970s and early 80s. Your career timed exactly with, unluckily for you, the period when South Africa were isolated from international cricket. So you never got the chance to play Test cricket. But I'm just going to read out your stats, Vinny, because you took in one season of county cricket, playing for Middlesex with me, and of course it was my first season in county cricket, 1980, you took 85 wickets in county championship cricket, an average of 14.72, astonishing. Right at the top of the national averages for that season, we of course won the county championship and what was then called the Gillette Cup, which is now the NatWest, or was then called the NatWest Trophy. It's now the rather slightly devalued Royal London Cup, the longer version of the One Day Cup. We won that competition as well, very much influenced by you. And over your career, and I say, you know, you were one of the greatest cricketers, never played Test cricket. Over your career, first-class career, 767 wickets at an average of 16.5. playing in South African Curry Cup, etc. Now, OK, for context, I've got Joel Garner's stats up here from first class cricket. And Joel Garner, generally reckoned to be one of the finest fast bowlers who ever lived, similar to you in that he had a similar height, 6'7", and also pace. And his stats were 881 first class wickets at 18.5 compared to yours, 767 at 16.5. So that just gives you a bit of context for how good a bowler you are. That's a long introduction, but let's hear from you. Look back at your playing career first. I mean, why were you so good?
It's almost by accident. You know, my dad played for South Africa. He was a batsman, wicketkeeper. A bit like me, a bit cumbersome. You know, he was not very sleek, like Brett Lee or Lennon Donald. So I had to work with those disadvantages. I wasn't like Joel Garner. Joel Garner, you saw him at Gully. He was fantastic. He was very lithe and had a wonderful physique. I was always, as you remember, a bit chubby. And so what I had to work on, I think, were three things. The only qualities I think I had was accuracy. I had bounce. I didn't swing the ball enormously, and obviously if you pitch the seam, the ball seams. So that's, everyone does that. And the last one, I found my love of cricket was in the psychological game you had out there as a bowler with the batsman, of working out the guy's faults and weaknesses and developing plans without a coach and without a bowling coach and without a physical coach. And to be honest here, without a physiotherapist or a doctor, you just sort of went on it with your group around you. And we were lucky in South Africa because I played with Mike Proctor and Barry Richards, Pat Trimbone, Trevor Goddard, and against Peter Pollock, Graham Pollock, you name it. So we had a very strong group, and we used to share ideas. So I was like an absorber of information. I was never destined to be a great cricketer. My dad, when I played for SA Varsities and bowled two bouncers in one over, said to me that night, I never thought you'd ever be a fast bowler. I was too sort of easygoing. But I developed, when I bowled, I was quite determined, you know.
That's an understatement. I mean, you are a sort of gentle giant because you're softly spoken off the field and a very kind person. And obviously I'll get on to that because I know one of the reasons I wanted to have you on today was to talk about your work in the community in Cape Town and the incredible impact that has had in the township that you're associated with. But before that, just to talk about your on the field, you were quite aggressive, actually. I mean, you were quite, I think, you know, sort of an ogresome image, which you weren't like that off the field, but you were, I think you were pretty intimidating to face.
I hope so. I mean, you have to be, you know. I remember Procky coming in to bowl to me when I was quite young, you know, this guy kicking himself off the side screen, hair flapping and just looking fantastic. So you had to be in the batsman's space. You had to glare at him. He had to know you were serious about getting him out. Mm. But, you know, the way it was done, I didn't bowl a great bouncer. I mean, I did bowl bouncers, but they weren't particularly horrific. But I think it was just accuracy and trying to sort of work out to contain him completely, to diffuse his abilities. So, and that was the strength. I mean, in the year of 1980, I was lucky enough to play against Gavaster, lucky enough to play against Glenn Turner. They both got hundreds against me. And a number of other really great players. We only played one match against the West Indies, which we didn't do too well. So we didn't really bowl too much because I think they had to score about 90 or 100. But you played against the best in the world over there. It was a great source of joy for me because I'd read about these guys always. I'm a great reader, so I used to go back to the 1890s, 1920s. And these people from Pakistan, India, West Indies particularly, who are greatly admired. My heroes were Alec Bedser and Wes Hall, you know, and I'm lucky enough to meet them both. And I sort of fashioned myself as a glimpse of those two, you know, trying to be accurate and then trying to be pretty aggressive. I mean, Wes Hall to me was dynamite. Mm. And yet when I met him, he wasn't exactly the biggest man, was he? You know, he's like, you know, you shrink a bit, I think. Mm. Oh, wow. I loved
it. Yeah, he was a fantastic bowler, wasn't he? Mm. Of course, the interesting experience for you as well was that you came to counter cricket sort of slightly later in your career, but your opening partner for Middlesex that summer was Wayne Daniel from Barbados. Yeah. So that was an interesting kind of juxtaposition, given, you know, you were still living through apartheid and so on. So how was that? How was that experience?
Well, the dynamic was extraordinary because I think fast bowlers are generally quite generous people off the field. And I remember our first game, you hadn't got into the team yet, it was against Notts. He got 4 wickets, so I got 4. But I remember getting my first wicket. He ran across from five legs and jumped into my arms. Now, that was amazing, seriously amazing. So it was a total acceptance. Then we go down to Scarborough. Were you playing at Scarborough?
No.
Fred Titmuss actually played. It was in his fifth decade. And the crowd bayed at Wayne and I, the Diamond, because they couldn't work out the relationship between a white South African and a black West Indian. And in the third day, when Bluey Bester actually scored 145 and almost saved the game, a number of the crowd came up to us and apologized to us. They said, I'm sorry, because it was quite racist, you know, in its own dynamic, and said, we didn't realize you were genuinely good friends. And you remember, I'll tell you a lovely story about Wayne. I presume I can say it on air. Wayne, I came to Maidstone after 2 years of being away. And you guys were playing a 2020 game, or whatever you call those Sunday league games. And he came off the field and he said, Vince, I've had a cartoon in my bag waiting to see you. And he opened it up and it was two yobbos with come off Harley Davidsons with fat guts and chains walking into a pub. And behind the pub owner had Free Mandela on his T-shirt. And they said, we'll have 2 pints of Mandela, please. Which is just lovely. It's typical of him. He was the most glorious of men. I can't tell you how much I really loved him. He was a very special individual and did wonderful things for you guys.
Yeah, it was an amazing opening partnership, which I was lucky to sort of follow it a little bit as a 20-year-old. I mean, just come on as first change. You know, no wonder I took a few wickets because the batsmen were absolutely kind of cowering in their boots, and they saw me come on and thought, well, hey, here we go. It was Wayne Daniels' sort of ferocious pace and your hostility and bounce and persistence. I mean, what a fantastic combination that was. It was memorable stuff. So tell us what you've done since, just briefly, impact in the community.
During that time we were amateur. The only time I ever got paid for cricket really was in Middlesex. So we always had jobs. I was a teacher. I just moved across from teaching into Wiggins Teep. It was a paper merchanting company based in the UK under BAT. And I started as a rep. The only reason I got to England was JT Murray and Don Bennett came out, and my boss, who I just joined, happened to be a Middlesex supporter of 1949 and saw the famous Edrich and Compton's Golden Summer. And so they persuaded him that I should go over and I could actually go to a couple of mills that were owned by Wiggins Teep, and I eventually ended up doing a week's course there. So I went back to that job, and I eventually ran the company after quite a long time. And then, you know, I'm not a financial genius and I'm not a financial man. I like the human spirit, basically. So I joined one of our clients, and then I went and became director of cricket in South Africa for 3 years before going to the ICC. And that was it. Came back at the age of 67. So I joined ICC when I was 60. I was quite an old bloke. And I came back here and then really had a sort of, I had a cancer issue. So for a year I was off the charts, and then I wanted to find some purpose. So I started what I do, Mussie Sports in Mussie Pumalela.
And before that, you looked after the ICC sort of umpires for a bit, didn't you?
Umpires and referees. So it was fascinating because I was privileged to be involved in the global game. So, you know, I was due to tour the West Indies in 1971 and never got there, Australia, and never got there because we were isolated. And eventually got there a long time later, went to the West Indies, spent a lot of time in Asia, and learned great lessons in Asia about being accepted and outsider being accepted. Not the fact that I was from South Africa or white, I was just an outsider. And how long it takes for them, the Asians, as well as the black communities in South Africa, to trust an outsider. because they're so tired of people coming and either feeling superior, what to do. And so the lessons I learned in Asia were very important to the work I do in the township of Cypher.
Yeah, so tell us about that. So how did you get involved in that? Before you do, by the way, I should just mention, you're speaking today from Fishhook, which is on the Cape Peninsula. Those who are watching this in video can see this, but go on, just give us a quick glance at where you are positioned.
Okay, so we have a view from heaven.
Yeah, you do.
So Bev's got my wife's got a B&B called Heaven Sent. And if I just tell me if I'm doing this right.
Yeah. Well, I can see the ocean and blue sky and mountains and a beach and a few little roofs. You know, there's not many houses between you and the sea. It's absolutely amazing.
The whole of False Bay. It's a ridiculous view.
Yeah, it's stunning. Amazing. And it's close to where you're doing your essential work.
It's 3 kilometres away.
So tell us how you got involved in that community and what the state of it was. And how it all came about. And we should mention, by the way, that the MCC Foundation that runs around 64 hubs in England and various ones in other parts of the world as well were quite influential in supporting this campaign.
I'll get to that. Very briefly, I came out of cancer for about a year, and I just thought, God, I've got to do something, you know. So I phoned a guy called Brad Bing who runs Sporting Chance, and I said, Brad, I'm happy to be a pro bono coach for you and go and work in some of your workshops, whatever. And he phoned me about a week later and said, listen, there's a school in Masipomalera called Orkanya, and Orkanya wants to start cricket in that area. They had some cricket before, but it fell apart. So I went to the school. Now, I used to be a teacher, okay, so I taught at high school for about 10 years. So I'm very sensitive. First of all, I love dealing with kids, and I'm very sensitive to the feel and dynamics of a school. And then sat down in this poor township, 50,000 people in half a square kilometer, 50,000 people in half a square kilometer. And I sat there in this poor community, 70% unemployment, 24% HIV AIDS. And there's that one netball court, and as this kid tripped across the netball court to go to school, she was slightly late, beautifully dressed. She was singing and skipping, and I thought, wow, here's a kid coming to school from this impoverished environment, happy. So I started, it took about a year and a half, as it does, those are my lessons of Asia, to infiltrate myself and develop a level of trust with the school governing body, the schools, and the community. And then I went, I was part of the MCC World Cricket Committee, invited on by Brailers. And I had sort of challenged some of the committee to say, I know you're involved with wonderful programs, but I think we all should be involved in a program that we have our hands dirty, that we actually work with. So they said to me the next day, okay, big boy, you go out and do it. And so I spoke with Derek Brewer and Brailers, and Derek Brewer was fantastic, and he took about 9 months for the MCC to be willing to give me £50,000 over a 3-year period to be startup capital. And there we started. But you know, Yaza, as you know with your life and I know with my life, you should start somewhere and your whole pathway just grows and keeps growing. After 5 years, it is still growing. So what started as a school program became a sports program, then became a facility building program, then became a life skills training program, then became development of coaches. So all our coaches come from the community and they are excellent. And we have 8 sports. Now we also have hip hop dance, which I only found out recently is an Olympic sport, would you believe? We do have chess, we have a choir, and we're introducing this term art for the first time. So this is an holistic program to develop the individual. It's just like I'm not sure whether you would agree with me, but I, for many years, thought cricket changed my life. And it did in a way. But what changed my life was learning life skills that cricket taught me. Discipline, sociability, teamwork, looking after others, helping, caring, working hard. And so those are the qualities, I believe, that develop proper, full, positive human beings. There's three things, really. There's sport and passionate pursuits, playing a violin, painting, whatever. There's your life lessons, and there's education. And in the end, I think the most important one of those three things, even though they're integrated like a marriage, are life skills. I think the ability to deal with people, the ability to see your future, those are the things that really count.
Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So tell us about the situation you found the school in. You said it was an impoverished community, no sports facilities.
Okay.
There was quite a lot of, I think, violence, boy on girl. You know, bit of a problem with being a girl in that environment. And did you find, and how has it changed?
Okay, so when I got there, there was one coach, there was one. Netball court, the only sport that was played against other schools was netball. So we put in three cricket nets, 2 40 by 20 AstroTurfs, and one big field, 60 by 30, with blades of Astro, play soccer and rugby there. Teams. We have 800 people playing sport after school. We've got 550 who take their sport very seriously. And we've infiltrated the staff. So 11 of the staff volunteer free, and they don't get paid much. And they live in a poor environment to help us coach because they see the joy of the people's faces. The other thing which is important is litter. Litter was horrific when we got there. We never made a thing of it. But because they developed discipline through sport, litter disappeared. It's the most amazing thing. When I got there, I don't know if other teachers would agree with me, but we found that in the township, 10-year-old girls always beat 10-year-old boys in a sprint. And the 10-year-old boys would always get very uptight and push the girls over and hurt them. And I spoke to the coaches about this, and we agreed we would just let sport take its course. That doesn't happen anymore. We focus on two things. Other than sport and life skills and education, two things. One is gender equality. So all our teams are mixed except rugby, even though we're starting to get girls playing rugby. All those other sports are mixed. So there are girls in our cricket team, there are boys in our netball team, there are girls doing cycling, etc., and all the other sports. So that was the one. And that has created. I'll give you an example. We played against Generations, which is a private school up the road, and our front line of our soccer team were all girls. Beat them 9-0. And who scored the goals? The girls. So the boys backed them up and the girls scored. Now that leads to respect. Experience, gender equality. It's not, you can't teach life skills in a classroom. They have to experience the humiliation of defeat and the glory of victory. And what hard work means. And that's what sport and other pursuits can give them. Mm. And the other one we work on is social cohesion. I was lucky enough just to pop across to America to see someone literally last week. As you know, in America, you can't have a conversation about Trump because the people are either Republicans or Democrats. It's impossible to have a conversation, to actually agree on things, to compromise, to discuss. And that is a worldwide issue. Brexit was the same. Well, in this country, we have divides, and the divides are education, residential, opportunity, racial, religious, wealth, you name it. We've got every divide. And part of our problem is we don't talk and we don't share. So what we do is we play sport against other schools and we mix with them and we talk to them and the staff integrate. And in the junior school and high school, which we're starting to operate now, which is great. For example, in the high school, we have three kids under 16 who play in the official cricket club second team. In the junior school, we've got 14 kids who play in their youth group on a Saturday. And in rugby, we do the same with their youth group. And that's important because those clubs are totally mixed, whites, coloureds, and blacks. There aren't many Indians in this area because that's mainly in the town. And they get to know each other. So when they leave school, they can keep members of this club and work with society, a general society. So, I mean, you'd understand the problems in South Africa. I don't go into the detail of that, but we haven't really moved on as far as division goes. We still have the townships. We still have lacking opportunity. The education in the black schools is appalling. 87% is below average.
So you basically got massive inequality still then, really?
Yes. One more last example, just as a stat that'll shatter you. 94% of schools do not have sport after school. We've won three rugby World Cups. We've been number one of three different formats of cricket from 6% of our schools, the 25,000. So all we can do, and this is where it's difficult, we can't change the world, but we can start the ripple. We can start doing something which is meaningful. Mm. And then hopefully we've got two schools, one in the Eastern Cape, one just up the road in Westlake, who have followed our process. And the Department of Sports are bringing in five guys. We're going to do a workshop with them to explain how you can introduce sport to the school at a very cheap price.
One of the reasons I obviously think it's a kind of pivotal moment for South Africa, perhaps, is because, you know, obviously the work you're doing is starting to have a ripple effect. But also we've got the recent announcement of the T20 new league starting in January, hopefully.
Yeah.
And, you know, the interesting thing is that all the teams have been bought by IPL franchises. I mean, you know, A, is that a good thing? And B, do you think that will help cricket penetrate society more effectively and have the sort of impact and effect that your campaign, your policies have been providing?
Whether we both and everyone knows that India is the major force in cricket worldwide. And if you don't have some sort of links there, which Graham Smith and Sourav Ganguly had, which allowed us to have the tour, you have difficulty. So that gave us considerable injection of cash. And this will give us considerable injection of cash. And this country is not economically strong enough to sustain an IPL-type environment. We just don't have the economy to do that. And we don't have the leadership to do that. So, and I'm talking leadership as in general for the country. If you said, is it a good thing? Yes, it is a good thing right now because it's going to be an injection of money. I think it's not going to really change anything from the grassroots point of view.
But could they, though? I mean, could they have that impact? Could you know, an IPL team get some community schemes going and, you know, get a bit of momentum?
The IPL are. I'm involved in talking to I've been asked to be involved in talking to someone next week on that. How that goes, I don't know. So they will have an impact. But the important thing is the lasting value is for us to create capacity within the township. So as long as that impact is not one of the great players coming in and having a net, it's better that they work with the coaches and the teachers to ensure that when they go, that impact remains. So that's part of our sort of mantra, is to develop the capacity within the township. I call ourselves interventionists. What is Mussey Sports? We coming in, providing something to them, showing them opportunity, getting a glimpse of what life could be like. So to tell you, Mussey is in Fishhook. So it's between Cormackie and Fishhook. It's about 2.5 kilometers from the sea. 25% of the township have never seen the sea. We're 45 minutes from Cape Town. Over 50% of the township have never been to Cape Town. So they're very cloistered. So we have to break them out and produce the social cohesion so they can see their own futures. Not the future of cricket or rugby, but see their own personal futures. That's the only way we can change this country.
Amazing. Are you seeing, you know, you've been doing this now for a few years.
5 years.
So have you seen the fruits of the labors? You know, what kind of case studies are
there? I can tell you stories, Yoza. Stories of kids. There's just one. I'll send you a video once we've got the link. We just released it. Of a child who's 12 years old, who lives in the shack on the wetlands, which is the poorest part of Mussey Pombalela. Mussey Pombalela has wealthy and poor like any community. This is the poorest part. She's brought up by an unemployed single mother. And she came and joined our soccer team. Within a month and a half, the confidence within her is absolutely extraordinary. And you'll see in the video that when she's talking to the coaches, she's talking like this, absolutely confident. Whereas she was teased a month and a half, she doesn't get teased anymore. Now, that's a small win. How she's going to develop when she's 21, I don't know. But I do know she now understands her own personal strength. And I can tell you examples of a 15-year-old girl, Zola, watching rugby and thought, why is it only boys? So she joined. She now plays for False Bay under 16 youth. She's an under 16 cricketer who suddenly came out of nowhere, almost made the Western Province girls team. I think I'm getting a bit like an evangelist, you know. I really believe in this stuff, totally, absolutely.
No, you can definitely hear it in your voice. So, you know, just to finish, I mean, obviously that's a fantastic contribution to society. What about what about the wider nation, South Africa as a whole? Give us a sort of sense of where the cricket is now. You know, you've had quota systems to deal with and different governing body chairmen and all sorts of. It's always been in flux a bit. So where do you think South African cricket is now?
I think it's in a better state as far as leadership goes with our board. Lawson and I do, and they've got some really good independent directors. And they seem to be leading us better. It's going to take time, I think, for the players to have total confidence because they've been disappointed for so long. You know, you don't just switch on confidence like this, but I think they are working with them well. The Players Association, I know, get on well with the chief executive, and that's the change. You know, the previous chief executive felt the Players Association was just a union and really all this stuff is made by the board and they should just listen to the board. The players themselves, we are, I think, work in progress. You know, we have good games, bad games. You've just seen those in England in the ODIs, where you have a shocking game, and then the first game was fantastic. As far as the quota goes, we were slightly better off, funny enough, about 2 years ago. A lot of the batsmen coming through are not from all demographics. So that's something they have to work through, as you'll see from the teams that are being picked over there. But we have some wonderful role models. I mean, Ngidi, Rabada, Bavuma are exceptional role models. So I think the work that they do outside the community. You know, I mean, Bavoma's got a foundation like Sia Khaleesi. And there are a lot of people from every demographic doing that. So I think that's going to bring it through, because people in the townships need to see the role models and work with them.
I was going to say that because I don't know, does cricket penetrate the townships yet?
Yeah. But, you know, if you're looking at sport, soccer, netball are number one and two. Rugby has become very popular because of the World Cup. Mm. But cricket is, I would think, number four. Mm. Might have that. Someone might disagree with me, but I think cricket was, when I was with Cricket Society, the second most popular sport in South Africa. Whether rugby has gone past it, I really don't know. But we're in a better space now. And I think the IPL will help us get a financial injection. We've been pretty shy of making profit on a yearly basis. We've been dipping into our capital from the past, I think. So we are in a better space. And I think we better regarded by the global community, which is just as important. You know, it's not just India. India and South Africa have a relationship that goes back to Mandela. You know, they have Mandela and Mahatma Gandhi. You can't have two better world leaders. And they develop similar sort of processes. And there's a deep respect. So I'm glad that has sort of filtered down over the years into cricket, which I think is very important to us. So I think in the short term, having India with the IPL is going to be great. It's going to give us money. They're going to do some work in the townships. But it's what the people in the townships and the people that surround them do that count. I promise you, Simon, if you walk through the streets of South Africa, or in Cape Town anyway, I haven't been to Joburg for a while, there's a camaraderie between people across colors or religions. It doesn't really matter. So the people on the ground are in good shape. It's the economy and our political leaders which are not growing great at the moment, and that we have to get right. Leadership is a big issue.
Does it worry you at all for the game that the South African board have decided not to play some internationals in Australia so that all the leading players are available for your new T20 competition?
Well, it's the same as the IPL being provided a window. I think that is not just a South African issue. I think what we're talking about is a global issue on cricket. You know, why can't we have, we just had this MC World Cricket Committee. You know, there are lots of different views out there. My view was that we needed to have a window of just test cricket, where you don't go from domestic league to T20. People get so confused. You know, when you hook into a World Cup rugby, it's rugby in the World Cup. You do that with soccer. You do that with Wimbledon and Australian Open. And we are just now a hybrid. We don't know where the hell we are. We don't know who our certain heroes are playing for. So I really feel like they seem to have produced a window for the IPL. We should have a window for test cricket. And we should cut down the sizes of test cricket. It's not so much the domestic league. It's what are you going to strategize for T20? Are you going to leave it as domestic, or you're going to use the cash cow of the ICC T20? At the moment, there's nothing wrong with having three formats. I was in a taxi in London recently, and the taxi cab, because they always got such fine wisdom, said, you know, you guys have got it right. You have kept going with the new generations. I took my 12-year-old daughter to 6 hours at Lord's of seeing the girls' game and the boys' game. She said she's hooked. She couldn't get hooked on a test match. And I understand that. We've got to remember that bit of it. But I think we've just got to sort out the structures. And our problem is, as you know, we've got a member-based board at the ICC. So it's very difficult for them to look at the global issues. And we have to bed that down. So I don't think this is a South African issue. I think this is a global issue.
And you've got grandchildren. Would you encourage them to be a fast bowler?
I'm trying to persuade my granddaughter here to be a fast bowler. There's a friend of mine, David Dyer, who's just been over to England. His grandchild there is a lightning fast bowler. She's about 12. And I think girls and boys, I think girls to be a fast bowler, you walk into a team. I think being a girl in cricket is really good because you can start cricket at 15, as there's so many examples, and play for your country at 19. Being a boy, that's not possible. So girls' cricket can really encourage good athletes to go through the system. And also when they get mothers, they'll follow the game, so it'll enhance the game. The boys is different. I mean, it's a good question, Simon. I prefer my grandkids to be a good-looking dude, fielded first, slip and bat number four, you know? But the discipline I learned and the love I had playing fast bowling was great.
Well, fascinating to listen to your story. And I just want to say, you know, thank you for all you've done for the game so far. And I'm sure we'll continue to do for society. South Africa is a unique country, which I think I was privileged to experience a little bit of.
Yes,
that cricket in the 1980s, early 80s, was the Currie Cup cricket. It was probably the most competitive cricket I've ever played, with the standard of each team. And let's hope that you can get back to that, I guess.
Yeah, I'd like to say this though, Yoza, just so you people don't think I'm doing amazing things. There are hundreds and thousands of people doing what I do here. I owe cricket a huge debt. So I don't feel I'm entitled to anything. Cricket has done amazing things for me, given me huge opportunities. And so the work I do is just joyful and a pleasure.
Well, what an amazing man Vinny is. Incredible contribution to cricket and society in general, and so much energy, actually, as well. Whatever he eats, I want some of it. He's a fantastic man, and the work he's done at Massey Stars, you can look that up, actually. It's really brilliant. And by the way, we've mentioned the MCC Foundation. Actually, they're staging the finals of the Hub competition on Saturday at Lord's. There are about 60 hubs around the country which the MCC run for kids sort of 15 and over to play cricket. They've had a 20-week competition this year. The boys' final at Lord's is Newcastle Boys' Hub against Nottingham Boys' Hub, and the girls' final is Bolton against Guildford. And those matches, T20 matches, are on Saturday at the HQ, Lord's, starting at 11. Free entry, so you can go and look that out. The MCC patron Mike Gatting and the MCC Foundation patron Mike Brearley will both be there, as well as Claire Connor, the stand-in head of the ECB for the moment. And it'll be a lovely day of young, aspiring cricketers performing on the greatest ground in the world. So, brilliant thing to attend, and thank you for the MCC Foundation for all the work they do in that context. So that's it for this week. We will be reviewing the T20 series between England and South Africa on Monday after the last game on Sunday. It was exciting, that first match. Looking forward to tonight as well. So we'll speak to you after that. Thanks for listening.
Podcast Network.